GM, welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we are here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And this time around, we go on Solana. We go do perps again. We have on Cindy, the founder of Drift, who shares with us her story from being a trader playing these markets back in like 2017, 2018, 2019, from the kimchi premium to the fund, to being like, hey, we can build something. And that's how Drift came about. And her story, you know, Kit, I won't just go into it. Kit, what are your thoughts on this one?
I feel like Cindy is such a genuine person, and you can hear it from her story. And
she
cares. You can tell
that she cares.
Yeah, she cares. And she cares for the user. She cares for the ecosystem. She cares for the ethos and the space. You know, we love her for it. Huge fan. And I, frankly, I can't, you know, normally I'm kind of a hard ass and I try to drill down on like the specs of the protocol. But honestly, this protocol really thought of all
of the worst
case
scenarios. You sound
like a
happy user, Kit.
I am a happy user. Oh, also, caveat, I am a user of the protocol. So, and I was given responsibility. So then, yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
No, definitely impressed by Cindy and what she's built with Drift and what's to come. And we go into all the nitty-gritty details. And so before we do, make sure you go ahead, subscribe, hit that bell button, give us a like. Let us know what you think in the comments. Make sure you go ahead, follow us on all our social media, on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram, at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter, at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. Welcome back to Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here as always with Capital K. And today we go over to Solana. We have on Cindy, the founder of Drift, that talked everything Drift, perps, Solana DeFi, and more. Cindy, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, guys. And thank you so much for agreeing to cover, you know, part of the crypto world that you guys would normally, you know, talk about. I'm really excited to, you know, tell you guys a little bit more about what we're doing and talk about everything Drift and Solana DeFi.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because, you know, we met up at ETC in Brussels and you're telling me everything that you guys are doing at Drift. I'm just like, man, I've been really fading Solana DeFi. I mean, I don't think I've been fading Solana, and like Solana has been like really at the forefront of a lot of things, especially people know for meme coins and a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like Solana DeFi doesn't get talked about as much, and there is a lot being built there, especially by you guys leading the way. So I'm excited to get into this. But before we do, for our guests at home that may not be familiar with you and your story, what's your background? How did you get into crypto and building? And I'm doing research for this. You're doing the kimchi premium back in 2017. So I'm just curious, what were you doing in Korea back then?
Yeah, I was actually just starting out in crypto at the time. I was a student back then. I was also working with SoftBank Ventures in Korea at the time. I just so happened to be very lucky because I actually had a Korean bank account at the time. And the main requirement for doing the trade was to be able to withdraw fiat in Korean won out of Korea. So I managed to, you know, do that and then repeat the trade multiple times with people that I knew had Korean bank accounts as well. So yeah, that like one thing led to another. And I was like, crypto as a trading as a trading economy still has so many inefficiencies that it warrants the you know, starting of an entire fund dedicated to arbing these kind of opportunities. So yeah, I was very, very lucky at the time.
I can't believe you were able to get a Korean bank account. That's so hard, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I think the only way was actually to be a student at the time. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. And then from that, you were able to sign up for an exchange and do this trade.
Exactly, yep. Exactly.
I actually had to marry a Korean in order for me to open my bank account.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. That goes a step further. Huge dedication.
Yeah. Okay. So you're doing the trade, and that's how you first got into it. And then how did your journey develop from there? And how did you get into developing Drift?
Yeah, so after I basically discovered crypto around that time, I had only touched the trading side of things. I basically got really deep into writing a bunch of trading strategies, not just between Korea and the US, but between other exchanges, for instance, in Malaysia, Singapore, and also between perpetuals that were just launching at the time. BitMEX had just launched the first perpetual swaps in crypto, so lots of inefficiencies and farming the funding rates and arbitrage basis at the time as well. So honestly, the strategies were still pretty primitive at the time, but there was just a lot of alpha in the market. So I was spending all my time just exploring the trading strategies. And then I had met my co-founder around that time. We decided to formalize what we were doing and raise a small fund for it. We were managing about 25 to 30 mil around 2018 to 2019. And we basically had expanded a bunch of the strategies that had initially run for Korea into slightly more sophisticated ways. We were doing, instead of just like two exchanges, we were trading on over 5 to 10 at the time. And yeah, it became pretty good operation. We started trading options as well, perpetuals, other types of derivatives, futures, and we basically kind of saw the maturation of crypto from a simple spot trading asset into what we see as a pretty mature market with different types of derivatives and very tight markets today. And one of the big drivers of going from running a hedge fund to actually building a project was because I think in 2020, DeFi Summer was one of the craziest moments of my life watching these protocols that, yeah, watching these protocols like go from 0 to a couple billion in the span of hours, really opened my mind to the fact that a lot of crypto was actually this complete permissionlessness and participation from anyone, and being on the like just observational side of things, it made me realize that running a fund was actually a more antithetical to like the crypto that I want to be a part of, which was fully permissionless. And my first foray into DeFi was actually starting to write some of the strategies that we were doing with options back in the day, helping the Ribbon Finance folks actually port these into the vaults at the time. And that was kind of my aha moment where I was like, all these like complex trading strategies that we're writing for our LPs and our investors could be made an entirely permissionless vault. No one needs to KYC with us. You don't need to sign the LP docs with us. You can just deposit money in this vault, and we never have to know who you are. And I was like, okay, DeFi is a step forward from what I'm doing, which is essentially just a traditional way of managing investor money. I thought that it was just a 1000x opportunity to be able to do that on a much wider scale. But one thing that was missing was actually that the only thing you could do was build like vaults on Ethereum in 2020. I realized that in order for DeFi to actually scale 1000x, you needed the exchange infrastructure to be built on chain as well. Of course, back in 2020, 21, with everything happening on ETH layer one, it just was impossible to build a functional exchange there. I mean, we all know this, right? So when Solana came about and gained popularity in 2021, we were very early into looking at how could you actually build a functional exchange doing derivatives on a new blockchain like Solana. So when they came about, I realized that was kind of the next big opportunity in crypto and DeFi, and jumped into building Perp Exchange on chain full time, won at the fund, and ended up like jumping into DeFi full time.
Wow. I was about to ask so many questions there, but you answered them. You answered like, oh, like this is your aha moment. Like, why'd you get into building? And the decision to build on Solana was because on Ethereum, it just wasn't capable at the time, like what you wanted to build and what you envisioned. And Solana like had like the vision for your V1. And so I'm curious, like in those early days, what was it like building on Solana at first? And then, like, when everything like went to shit, like, what was it like during like quote unquote dark time in Solana?
The two very different eras. We started building in March 2021, and there were like
Oh,
two DeFi
nice.
apps on Solana. And then, yeah, it was Orca and Radium. So basically, the simplest AMMs, and that was it. I think there was no functional wallet besides Solit at the time, which was built by FTX. And I don't know if you guys used Solit before, but it was a really ugly UI where it wasn't even a browser extension. Like it was like literally like a
This
render
sounds
of
like
your
the
balances,
My
and that was
Ether
it.
wallet. This is the My Ether wallet of
No,
Solana, it
exactly.
sounds like. Yep.
Exactly. So that was kind of what we had going on. Phantom wasn't even a thing back then. I remember the early beginnings of Anchor being a thing, where it's like this framework that helps developers build Rust smart contracts without getting really deep into the meat. But it was pretty slow, it was pretty buggy, and our core developers had a pretty tough time kind of using the sandbox frameworks at the time to build what would be a very complex product. So I think if you tried to do the 0 to 1 process now versus back in 2021, it would probably have taken us like 10x less time than it did for us to build our first version of Drips. I think overall, it took us about 5 6 months to build our V1. We launched it at the first breakpoint in November 21, and yeah, that was a pretty crazy time to launch, given that Solana was like running into new highs, everyone was euphoric, and it was sort of like more about the it was more about the celebration versus the product at the time. So honestly, I think we launched at the craziest time that we could have possibly launched a product.
And then now
And
fast
so,
forward to like the depth of the bear. Like how was building through
yeah.
that?
Yeah, so it really felt like it really felt like a heaven and hell, right? Like you sort of like jumped into the best possible moment of launch. Everyone was like clamoring to use the product. It was the first perps product that was launched on Solana, so obviously everyone loves leverage. But the product wasn't it wasn't, I would say, as developed as it is today. Like you guys know how the risk engine works today. None of that was really present in the early versions of the product that we launched at Breakpoint, which we would still consider kind of an MVP, right? But it gained traction so fast. I think we hit hundreds of millions of daily volume within a month or two, and then we became one of the fastest growing perp exchanges to hit like $1 billion in volume ever at the time. And in my head, I was like, this is insanity. Like this level of growth like cannot really be replicated in any other ecosystem. But that was the scale of how manic Solana was at the time. Like people just didn't look into risk, and yeah, it was a crazy time. And when you contrast that to when we launched our V2, which was the day that FTX collapsed in November of 2022, it was a completely different universe, right? Yeah, like we launched our V2 with renewed risk functions, super proper cross collateral, like the first cross collateral, a fully on-chain like DeFi engine that you'd ever seen. We had spent so much time refining like risk parameters, exactly how to build like unlimited markets into our V2. So it was like a massively upgraded version to this like MVP rickety product that we had built in V1. But we launched it, and it was like crickets. Like no one cared, like the entire market was silent. Everyone we spoke to was just like, guys, like I know you spent a bunch of time building this cool risk thing on V2, but maybe you should just pivot to Arbitrum or move somewhere else. And I remember we were really
You're getting like,
happy
oh, it should go.
to hit. And this is 22, right? Everyone hated Solana at the time. Like even I guess there were very loyal users left, but I will honestly say there were probably 100 people left in Solana at the time who like truly believed that like Solana would continue to grow. Like it was a really tough time. I remember like in my role on a team doing product and BD and getting users in. So I was literally spending time talking to individual traders every day, because those were the only people that knew that the product was launched and was actually like cared that it was live. So it's a very different environment from our V1 launch, right? Like peak euphoria and then peak depression. So it actually felt like we had deserved the success of V2, you know, 2 years later after it had grown, because it came from a place of we actually were solving user problems. We were talking to users rather than a place of we're launching into like peak manicness where users actually don't know what the product is doing. They're not educating themselves. So it felt good to kind of have and have seen the peak and the bottom.
It was a much more grounded foundation for success, basically.
Exactly. It was very, very humbling. Like initially we were like, you know, we're geniuses at the top of the world, but realized that that was the function of the market and that we had to build a product that actually works, actually is building something new that no one else had done before. And it took us kind of like a year and a half to reach the same level of success that our V1 had reached within like 2 months, right? But it had felt much better when we had hit that point because we knew that we were doing the right things and making the right steps.
And like the, you know, Deep Bear, you were building along the same co-founder that you founded the fund with, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And would you say like, because of your guys' like history, kind of like going through entrepreneurship together was kind of what kept you guys going and building through the bears? Like, you know, there is a bright light at the end of the tunnel, you know, just got to have faith.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would honestly say that our team might be the most optimistic people I've ever met. And my co-founder, David, might also be one of the most optimistic people that I know. And I don't think that we would have continued on Solana or stuck on Solana if our team wasn't so bullish on Solana, especially our technical founding members as well. I'll link their Twitter bios on after this call, but they're like the reason that we stayed on Solana during the deep 22-23 bear was because of our technical team. They truly believe that there was no other place that they could have built a product like Drift. And even though from a business perspective, Solana's TVL was 200 million in 2023, it had fallen from like 10-20 billion in 2021. And it sort of felt like, could it ever get there again? It was like, it was down 99%, right? It was like, there was no way. And from a business perspective, like the perspective that I'm coming from, it's like, obviously it makes sense to migrate all your liquidity to places that was actually growing. But from a technical perspective, we're going to take, what, another 3 to 6 months to build an Ethereum MVP. We don't know the culture in Ethereum. And we also know for a fact that the way that Solana smart contracts versus e-smart contract works are fundamentally different. And we can't actually build what we have built, like cross margin, these risk functions on ETH. So our decision to stay on Solana was actually driven by technicals versus business fundamentals. And we were driven very strongly by the belief that because it will work and it's the only place that it can work, users will eventually come back and belief and confidence will eventually come back. And that was why we kind of stuck through the bear on Solana at the time. It wasn't because we were like, oh my God, you know, we love this so much, but it was because we knew that that was the only place that it could work. And that optimism kind of like kept us going throughout that year.
You mentioned the culture of Solana versus ETH. Two questions, like, what do you see are like the main differences in the users and traders on Solana versus like the traders and users on ETH? I guess that's one question. Sorry.
I think that I guess this is a little bit different depending on market cycle as well. I'd say the meme coin traders on Solana now are very different from like the meme coin traders on Solana a year ago, just because of the wealth effect of everything going up. I would say that when we were in kind of the bear phase of Solana, a lot of the traders were a lot smaller on Solana. People just weren't trading size. And the average transaction was like $10 to $100 versus thousands of dollars in ETH, just due to the nature of gas fees. But I think if you look at the kind of split today, I would say sizing looks more similar across the board. And I think it is because a lot of liquidity has migrated over to Solana. And from what, like, anecdotally, a lot of traders that I know who, you know, a year ago said I would never trade on Solana are all trading on Solana today. So I think it's interesting because it's kind of like attention drives more liquidity, and then liquidity drives more volume. And a lot of the kind of recursive nature of that has actually taken place. It's a flywheel, yeah. So I don't really think there's like a huge difference between the types of users on ETH and Solana. I think it's very much like driven by the wealth effect of the current cycle. And I would say a lot of the meme coin cycle today has happened on Solana, at least the cycle.
And how do you think Drift positions itself in this like huge influx of users that were driven by the attention of memes and things like, you know, pump.fun making it really easy to launch a meme coin and like, boom, you're off the bonding curve, and all this attention and all these new users are coming because of the memes. And how does like Drift position itself to like capture that value?
I should start, if I could jump in, I just want to ask one preposition question before that is like, was there an inflection point that you saw, whether it be in the product or in the community, that you're like, holy shit, everything is about to come back? It's like, I've seen this movie before. I've seen this hype. Was that like after the meme coin craze, or was it like kind of before that, just to kind of frame some time frame here?
Was it the Jito airdrop?
Was it a Jito
airdrop? It was actually before that.
Okay.
It was breakpoint of 23. That was the inflection point, at least for me, because when I was, I guess, comparing the breakpoint experiences of 22 and 21 versus 23, 23 was, I think, the most grounding conference I had ever been to. And the people that I'd spoken to were all like, you know, kind of the remaining soldiers of Solana. And and the energy was actually, I it's very difficult to describe it, but it really felt that the optimism was in the air at breakpoint of 23. It was a very, very special feeling because I think it was like, you know, everyone had left. Like there were no like scammers or grifters at the conference. Everyone was like using the chain, and everyone who was continuing to be on Solana had that confidence that the products are much better than they were a year ago. And during that conference, I remember, you know, there were announcements of airdrops, announcements of new product launches, and I had never felt like that palpable organic energy in the air that came from how excited people were about DeFi primitives. And it sounds really nerdy, but I think that was actually the inflection point. Solana was starting to go up again at the time. Confidence was starting to be rebuilt, and it wasn't like crazy yet, but it was getting to it. I think, you know, I think Solana had just broken like $30 or $40 in November of 23. And people were like, oh my God, it's back. And, yeah, I think that energy kind of reminded me of the early conviction that people had, and the early like build up of the cycle. And that was like pre kind of like meme coin craze. I think that was like the time where we realized that we had made the right decision to stick on Solana.
Ah, got it. So it was that grounded organic interest that was like still there, that stuck it out through, I call it like the dark time. And I feel like every chain and ecosystem goes through that, whether it's Bitcoin, like whatever, 15 years, Ethereum, DAO hack, Solana, FTX, like it's just a rite of passage if you want your ecosystem to be successful. Okay, so that was the moment, breakpoint, I think that was in October, then Jito airdrop, then meme coin craze. And getting back to my question, how does Drift position itself with all this meme coin interest?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. So maybe to peel it back a little bit, I can talk about what products do we actually have today and how we see the audience form for each. So of course, I think everyone knows Drift as a perpetuals exchange. We primarily are a derivatives product, but in the back end, we also support swaps, spot, and earn products as well. So how we see ourselves is sort of like an integrated all-in-one DeFi platform that feels more like a bank brokerage account where you keep your assets in there. They're constantly earning yield from people who are trading derivatives and borrowing and lending against your assets. But every dollar that you have within Drift is actually usable for all of these functions. So you deposit 10 USDC. That 10 USDC is earning yield automatically. It's able to be used as margin for perpetual trading. And you can also use that USDC to swap anytime you want, because we can use any asset as collateral. So the way that we see and think about the exchange is that it's this sort of like big all-in-one system that has these functions all together, which is why we care a lot about it being a big TVL sync, because once dollars come into the system, you can use dollars to do anything with it, whether it's like do perpetual trading, spot, swap. And so going back to your question about how we actually position ourselves for the meme coin craze, I would say initially we had focused a lot more on perpetual traders who wanted to take positions in major assets like Solana and Bitcoin, ETH, and meme coins that sort of like made it above a certain market cap, right? So as an example, Bonk and WIF are actually our fourth and fifth biggest markets outside of Sol, BTC, and ETH. And we think that perpetuals are a more mature product where you can't really launch perps on any like 500K market cap meme coin that comes up, because it's just super easy to manipulate, right? Like you could, you know, you could run a bunch of manipulations to drain all the money out of these like isolated insurance funds. So it's almost not worth it to launch perps for these assets that are a lot lower in market cap. But once they graduate above like a certain amount, then it's a huge market for us. Like for instance, recently we've been going on a big cat coin like listing frenzy, listed when, Popcat perps, I think the first on Solana. Popcat's doing really, really well. And so the way that we position ourselves is like, we're the place to trade the more mature meme coins, the place that the meme coins have like reached an inflection point. And yeah, we see like a big group of traders really like that. And we've been very, very close to ground on listening to what people want to trade. And one of the big products and that we're launching actually this week is Election Center meme coins as well. Ooh. So obviously, yeah, prediction markets and trading around the election has been a big source of discussion on Twitter lately. And so we're actually launching a product where it's pre-prediction markets, but you can trade the election meme coins in a way that you couldn't before on a like separate page. It looks very silly. It's like, you know, long comma or trem. Unfortunately, Woden's out of the game. But yeah, having it all consolidated in a platform and giving people sort of like categories to trade is how we see it like from a product perspective. It's like you gotta kind of like continuously feed people, categorize it in a way that is understandable to users.
Got it. Yeah, adopting to users. Oh, okay, you're gonna say something?
No, I think Cindy said one thing that really caught my interest was that once money goes into Drift, it kind of stays there and it becomes your bank, because, you know, I obviously am a Drift user and I kind of do that. You know, so my workflow is always, if I were to ape into a meme coin, it does great. Then I take it and I just throw it into Drift, because Drift is just like my go to the moon or go home bag, right? Everything that goes in there is gonna slide the lever to the right, you know. So then I wanted to ask, like, have you seen, you know, two questions. Is there an analysis that you've done for every single dollar that comes into Drift? How much fee revenue did you generate off of that dollar? Like, I'm very curious if you guys, like, is that kind of a KPI that you guys think about? Because, you know, when you mentioned dollars coming in and never leaving, I would imagine you treat it like almost how casino does it, you know, where they just take a 2% rake. So their job is just to bring people in the door and they're just going to take their rake.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good question. I really like how you frame that, because our core philosophy is like, we want to own the entire asset lifecycle of, you know, traders on chain, because once you generate wealth on chain, where do you actually store it, right? Like that's not a good place to manage all of your assets in one place. And our vision for where we're taking Drift, which is why we launched Drift Earn, is that with like these meme coins that are doing well. WIF is actually an asset with collateral on a platform. So if you made a bunch of money off WIF or Bonk, you can now use that to deposit into earn strategies or strategies that are like simply earning like lending yield on Drift. It's not crazy. It's maybe like 2 to 3%, but it's better than nothing. And you can borrow USDC against it, right? And having that as sort of like a financial advisor platform will enable you to kind of see it as like, I can actually take these meme coins and take it a step further, basically solidifying their status as assets versus just like meme coins that you can throw around like keeping your phantom. Basically, you're not really earning anything if you're just, your assets are just sitting on a platform. So a lot of our vision is like, can we take these on-chain assets and turn them into really useful assets that are generating yield, usable as collateral, and complete the on-chain lifecycle. So you never have to basically go into fiat again because your savings account is now also your perp account, also your borrow land account. And that's the experience that we want to capture. In terms of where like the revenue really comes from, revenue doesn't really come from borrow land. We do take a small percentage of the borrow and supply APR difference. It's a tiny amount that's, I think, less than like 1% of our total revenue to date. A lion's share still comes from perps trading. So we don't take any sort of like rake from just people depositing funds on the platform. Nice. But we see it as a way to just get people to slowly touch perps and slowly touch, depositing into strategies that might be a little bit more unknown to you. Depositing is a very simple act. It's like everyone in DeFi knows how to do that. Trading perps with like 20x leverage and like 2% to your liquidation price is very scary. But it's what makes the most money for people, right? So our thinking has always been like, let's just get users in the door first. We're not going to make money off your deposits. This is just a way for you to experience what it's like to keep your assets in a place where they can become useful. And then slowly discover the different functionalities of the platform, whether that's like depositing in a managed strategy where an external manager is like managing your perps positions for you, running like basis or like algorithmic positions for you, or trying your hand at doing it yourself, right? Like you're very bullish on, I don't know, on TIA or something, and you're bearish on Sol. You can run that trade as a pairs trade on the platform, and once you kind of gain like more and more confidence, right? So, I think we want to be that place where you're just like you're just home. We're just home for your assets, and then from there you can start exploring like things based on your risk appetite.
Yeah, this actually leads to my next question quite well, because when I was doing research for this, something you mentioned about these external vaults, a lot of the most successful ones aren't even managed by market makers, but individual users with bots. Did you expect that behavior? And what do you think that says about DeFi?
Yeah, it was quite interesting. And going back to the dark days of Solana, one of our core issues was actually liquidity in the platform. And the reason that there was slow liquidity at the time was because it was very difficult to get the larger market maker shops to integrate. A lot of them didn't see the payoff of integrating on Solana. It being a very different environment from EVM meant that they would need a completely separate Rust team to like manage their Solana positions and whatnot. And a lot of them were just like, you know, this is not worth our time, given the kind of volumes that we see now. So it's obviously like a chicken and egg thing and creates like a negative flywheel where nobody wants to like quote. But what we saw and what was very encouraging was that there were a lot of smaller market makers that maybe just had a couple hundred K to start off with that were very, very well versed in how to quote on-chain on Solana, understood MEV deeply on Solana. And these shops don't have a name. You know, they're like one or two guys in the basement somewhere. Maybe not in a basement, but they eventually during Solana bear ended up being huge amounts of market share of liquidity provision on Solana. So till today, there are a couple of shops that came from that era, and continue to do very well today, even as the big brand name market makers have reestablished themselves in Solana. So today, you know, I think everyone, most of the large trading shops are back quoting on Drift and on Solana. But a lot of the market share is actually, yeah, still split between these smaller guys and the Wintermutes of the world. I mean, they're doing great as well, but it's very interesting to see, you know, the kind of the conviction of like the smaller individual bots actually being able to outcompete large trading shops. But yes, we're still back.
It's just super interesting that this behavior kind of emerged. And I think it also speaks to your guys's, I guess, foresight, like out of the necessity to build for this lack or this dearth of market makers, you had to build in like multiple liquidity layers so that when an order hits the platform, it's literally routed through everything all in one platform. Could you kind of walk us through how does the, you know, just-in-time auction works? How does the keeper bots and then obviously the backstop AMM at the end?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny because like people stop asking these questions when it's a bull market because they don't want to care. They don't want to talk about mechanisms anymore. They just want to talk about like metrics. Yeah. Love it, by the way. The way that our liquidity mechanism works, we call it a liquidity trifecta. You know, you have sort of like three layers of defense, for filling an order. Primarily, I would say about 50 to 60% of liquidity today on major markets come from our order book. And our order book is built in a way where it's a decentralized order book. So it's matched by a network of solvers that run the algorithm of matching orders whenever there's a cross between, you know, bid and ask spread. And these keepers actually hold a local copy of the order book, kind of similar to, you know, solving consensus on chain, and essentially match orders and place them back on chain when there's a match. And these keepers, solvers, are typically market makers as well because they are already running like little copies of the order book, and it's a very easy operation for them to add this to their list of algorithms that they run. So most MMs we know are running both MM and keeper operation. The trouble is with more meme coin markets where there isn't really any market maker willing to quote for it. We also have a backstop automated market maker that will quote for markets that are a lot less liquid. So if you look at our recent launches where we launch pre-launch markets, market makers are not actually very active in the order book on pre-launch markets. If you look at the source of liquidity, it's almost entirely virtual AMM provided liquidity. And the way that this VMM works is that it has a essentially known reserve price for the price that it wants to quote for a market, and a known spread based on the volatility that the asset has. And it will quote like a normal market maker. And anyone can actually deposit liquidity into this AMM pool as well. They are very volatile because perp markets have leverage. So if you're an LP, you can be market making with leverage. So we actually had a issue where we had a lot of people thinking that it's sort of like just free money when you actually have to manage these positions very actively in order to make money from it. So we moved this product to essentially like a way more advanced section, and now it's created like less problems. Like only advanced users are really like providing liquidity on what we call the BAL now. But yeah, basically, you know, providing MM liquidity on leverage markets is like not easy. And we like made the mistake of marketing it as a retail product first, you know, and that was like, that did not like pen very well for some users who are like, I'm gonna go, yeah, like 20x leverage market making for this asset that, you know, people don't know about. So and then
got it. And
I guess the final
go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, go
ahead. No, please.
Yeah, the finish. Final source of liquidity, just to finish on the note, I know this is a long one, is just in time liquidity. We have a RFQ like system where every time a market order hits the order books and market before it hits the order book, essentially gets broadcasted to a network of the market makers on a platform that can choose to fill the order within a certain band of like Dutch auction. So they're competing to fill it first to get the best price for the market maker. And this is kind of very similar to how Robinhood's PFOF system works, where the market makers get a first look at the orders coming in. You sort of know that it's not toxic flow because arbitragers and toxic flow participants would not actually use market orders. So this way, you're protecting market makers against MEV, and you're giving them a chance to filter out the type of flow that they want to match against. So we see just-in-time liquidity as actually very useful for larger, more established markets like Sol BTC and ETH. But again, similar to kind of order book, it's not very well used in the meme coin, altcoin markets.
And thank you for that very, very detailed breakdown of your liquidity defense. And I love the way you use the word defense because it's so apt here. Because, you know, normally if we only relied on the market maker, they can basically quote at any price they want to. And whenever it's a crazy volatile, they can just take a step back and let the book go crazy. But because of there's this backstop AMM that comes in, it forces the market maker to behave in a very user-friendly way, because you got to fill this order. If not, you're going to miss out on the spread, right? And you kind of put like a floor price, like the worst executable price for the end user. So I really like the way that you use the word defense there. And then now to add to that, though, you mentioned 50-60% is filled by kind of the keeper bots, the limit orders, right? And then like what was the other 40-50% kind of filled out by? Is it just in time, or does the AMM, how often does the AMM get hit?
Yeah, for like pre-launch markets and the illiquid markets, it's almost entirely AMM, like maybe 80-90% AMM. For Sol, it kind of depends. It's majority JIT or order book and a small percentage AMM. So I think for Sol, it's like less than 15% AMM, and the rest are split between JIT and order book, depending on the day.
Wow. Thank you for that. And, you know, earlier you said you didn't want to, or in the beginning, you marketed the LP pool as a retail product. Could you share like a horror story about like what happened there, and how did you kind of come back from that? Because I'm sure other people would love to learn, right? This is educational for other builders out there who kind of launch a product, you know, Mark set the wrong thing, and then they got to walk it back a little bit.
I release in prod. This is what it's about.
Yeah. And to be clear, it's not like we said, you know, this is like a risk-free thing. It was like very, like we said, this is an experimental product. You could lose everything with leverage, but I think one thing that is important to note is that even if you say that, you know, people don't actually read unless it's like right in front of the face.
No one reads the pop-ups.
So, no one reads the pop-ups. Yeah. They just like click and shut it. So our mistake was actually like branding it as a Drift Liquidity Provider, DLP, which is very similar to in naming to other like LP products out there. So like GLP is one example, JLP is another example. But in reality, you know, DLP is a lot more complex than how the JLP and GLP products work. So I think our mistake was actually framing it too closely to existing products that were on the market. Even though the way that ours work was like synthetic quoting, you're actually quoting based on how a virtual AMM would quote, rather than holding a basket of assets. It's very, very different style. So when we had gotten enough like complaints of people being like, why did I, you know, make 1,000% for the last month, but then this month I'm down 80%, we realized like, okay, there's too much confusion here. Like there wasn't like a big blow up moment. It was sort of like a steady stream of users just continuing to tell us that, hey, I'm like feeling really bad about the volatility in this product, even though the volatility was like placed out there. The historical returns were all like out there and transparent for people to know. It just created a lot of questions. And that's not the type of product that we feel creates, it makes people's lives easier, right? Like, I think people were like, oh, I love volatility, like, let me go into this. But actually, if you don't understand how it works, it becomes, yeah. But actually, I don't think that's what you want. So we just like basically rebranded it into BL, more like a, you know, balance, like you have to keep your product balance, that type of thing. We moved it to like a super advanced section of the UI. And honestly, like, that's where it should belong.
Lesson learned.
It's been great since.
So this is all about V2, but you mentioned, I think in a previous interview, that V3 is coming out soon, TM. And what I found interesting about V3 is that I believe you're taking the execution environment off Solana, and it's going to be a side chain or just off chain. Can you go into this decision? Like, I thought Solana was supposed to be monolithic. I thought everything was supposed to be on Solana. So I find it fascinating that like now modular is coming to Solana in the way that you're imagining architecting V3.
Yeah, and to be clear, I think a lot of the like conversations around V3 were more exploratory, and we're actually currently mostly spending our time on just continuing to build out V2, continuing to build out new features with the V2 infrastructure that we have. So I mean to weigh in on kind of like the modular versus monolithic debate a little bit on that side, it's still an open question on where that remains like for us. I know that there are some other, you know, perplexes on Solana that have definitively going on the L2 route. It's not as clear for us at the moment because from our perspective, because we are, you know, not just a perp dex, we're a TVL sync, we're borrow lend, we're earn. We actually need to have the assets exist all in one plane for this concept to work. Suddenly, if you're asking every single person who deposits on Drip to bridge to a random bridge controlled by us that, you know, doesn't actually exist in Solana, you're then suddenly creating like a bifurcation of the assets that we want to custody, that we want users to custody on Drip itself, right? So it's difficult for us because we're not just a USDC-based perp dex. So building out like a solo app chain or a solo app L2 is not as interesting to us versus if we think about you know, the sort of like optimization in terms of execution. I think that's a separate question entirely. There's actually a lot of very interesting projects that are doing things like ephemeral rollups that could help you delegate to faster non-voting validators like Magic Block, for instance. That could help you get the more centralized exchange latency requirements that, you know, users are looking for. So our ideal future in terms of kind of like stack, and I don't think this exists yet. We're still like very deep in like research and R&D phase. Is, you know, assets live on Solana, but from a order book execution speed and latency perspective, you're basically able to, you know, have an execution environment for like matching itself that happens in a much faster like parallel plane than the actual Solana itself. Again, you know, very, very early all in the research. Game, like I would say, yeah, all research, but that's like the ideal vision for us. We wouldn't want to bifurcate assets from the main chain.
And you mentioned there's ephemeral rollups, which I've never heard of before. Can you go into what an ephemeral rollup is and where it's at now?
Yeah. So I think kind of similar to what Altair has done, where instead of having rollups that persist at all times, you have sort of state-based rollups that exist only for particular transactions or events. So, you know, one example is like for gaming or for like an NFT mint, that doesn't need to congest the main chain. If you could have the mint take place on a rollup that would eventually not persist after the event occurs. And this concept could be applied to stuff like, you know, matching an order, or like batching like a group of orders together that can batched back to the main chain.
Sounds so elegant, ephemeral.
Yeah, it does. and there are really smart teams that are working on this right now. I mean, we are not like infrastructure builders at AMD, so we're excited to partner up with folks that are deeper in the game than we are and learn from them. But yeah, that's basically kind of how it could work for an order book type product like us.
Got it. And shifting gears a bit, a few months ago was your TGE with the Drift token. You guys had a really interesting airdrop mechanism, which I found to be really smart the way you did it. And can you go into that? And can you go into, like, now that it's been a few months, how do you think the TGE went? Did it accomplish its goals? And, like, where do you see, the community of Drift holders going?
TGE was 2 months, 3 months ago now for us. And I mean, I would say it was a pretty big milestone for Drift because it was the first step into actually decentralizing our user base and community. So yeah, it was a pretty big airdrop. We did a 12% drop to biggest holders and traders, and a major focus of it was airdropping to loyal users over time. And some interesting elements of it was that the airdrop was heavily actually catered towards people who continued to use the protocol over time, so emphasizing for loyalty. And what this meant was that the airdrop farmers that used the protocol once and sort of didn't persist after a while got a lot less than someone who was more consistent over time. And this is a kind of a methodology that no one had really tried before. So we obviously, like, there's a lot of pushback whenever you announce airdrops, right? Like, there's everyone's like, I deserve more. Like, I want this, I want that.
Someone is unhappy.
And we did our
Many
best.
such
Yeah,
cases.
exactly. Like, many such cases. And you don't really realize it until you're the one that has to respond to these things. So we did this Friends of Drift form where you could basically petition to us that you deserve more than what you got in the initial airdrop. And we did a small mini drop, I think about a month after the initial drop for users who felt like they were wrongly given less than they should have got. And that actually led to a lot of community love because people honestly like just wanted a chance to talk about how they felt and prove to us that like they deserve more. And honestly, I think the people that got the second drop continue to stay like pretty loyal and active within the Discord and the community. So I was pretty happy that it panned out the way it did. A lot of the way that we launched was also quite different from how other protocols, especially this year, launched. We chose actively to launch at a lower, more fair FDV, closer to what our last round was, to allow our community to be able to buy in at prices that private investors like would be purchasing at. So a lot of people were quite happy with that decision. I think we wanted to make sure that we didn't replicate the kind of down only chart that like yeah basically the airdrop projects like had before. And so yeah, I would say that overall community sentiment is good. Governance is kicking off. We launched governance in multiple forms, so like FutureArchy and MetaDAO has been live as well. There's been a couple of passed and failed proposals already for grants, new products. Users can also start to talk about what assets they want to see traded. So yeah, honestly, I think it's gone better than expected. Like this is my first time ever like launching something like this into the market, so new to the game as well. But I'm honestly very excited to see where the community takes it.
From trading tokens to launching a token, the journey of Cindy in Drift.
Yeah. Yeah, I
that
love
would be that's a good
that.
title. That's a good title for this pod.
Yeah, that's a good
And there's
title.
one more. There's a mechanism, also the 24-hour mechanism that you didn't mention. And this mechanism, I actually had a lot of fun with it because I was like tormenting myself with it. I was like, should I wait? No, I gotta get it. Oh, should I wait? No, let's forget about it. But it was so difficult because I just had the tab open on my second screen and then the countdown is just going
You're just
down, but
torturing
then my
yourself.
token quantity is
Oh,
going up. And I'm just like,
yeah.
Am I ready? I love that. You know, it was much more dynamic, and it actually made me feel like a different type of way, rather than just hit claim and then go to, you know, Jupiter or anywhere and just smash the market. So that was really fun. Yeah. And I love the Friends of Drift thing. And a huge part of it, you're absolutely right, people just want to be heard, right? They just want to air their grievances. And I would imagine your secondary drop wasn't like nearly that substantial either, but it's just like the act of hearing the community is a great engagement tool, but also a retention tool. Right. And kind of leading up to your TGE though, Cindy, I want to take you back prior to the TGE moment, but the planning leading up to that. Because I remember after the Jito airdrop, everybody was on Sol farming super hard. And I remember that Drift actually paused new account opening because you guys are just getting slammed with a ton of that. Right. So could you kind of walk us through like, how was it like dealing with this just massive influx of like airdrop farmers? Any best practices that you can impart for other, you know, founders to kind of, you know, deal with this?
Yeah. We didn't pause account creation, but we implemented what we call a civil resistant account creation tool where it became more expensive to open up new accounts on Drift, depending on kind of like the trailing amount of new accounts open up. So I remember there was like this hour on a weekend right after the Jito airdrop where we're getting like thousands of new accounts an hour. And obviously like that was 100 times more than like our average pace. So what we did was it's actually very expensive for us to maintain so many accounts that are not doing anything in our system. So we started charging essentially rent for opening up new accounts that was dynamic based on the amount of accounts that were opened up in the last hour. And at some point, I think this fee went to a couple of Sol. And obviously, people were like, oh my God, it's so expensive. But you can claim the rent back if you wanted to close your accounts, right? So it wasn't like we were taking their money. We just wanted to prevent people who didn't actually want to trade from ruining the experiences of the people that were trading. Because with such a complex system, you can imagine that a huge influx like that of like useless accounts essentially are like create huge load in the system. So after we implemented this, it became a lot more stable. And even with the civil resistance mechanism, we were still seeing accounts like popping up, but definitely more like filtered out a lot of the like completely fake users that were like just looking to spam. So
got it. And so Drift today, I'm curious, what are the metrics? What's Drift looking like today in, you know, volume, TVL, and a few years from, what's like your ultimate goal for Drift? Like, where do you see Drift best case scenario?
Yeah. So we just hit about 35 billion in cumulative volume. We just hit, I think it was 428 million in TVL, 520 in total deposits. And, you know, it's pretty crazy thinking back to the depths of Solana where we're now 2x of what, you know, Solana's entire TVL was at the time. You know, our big vision is to continue innovating on the fronts of DeFi. So continuing to basically add a lot more assets as collateral. Recently, we've added stuff like Ondo's USDY T-bills as collateral and Drift. Now you can let the government pay your funding rates. We added money market tokens as collateral on Drift. And the big vision there is sort of to be the home of all sorts of like yield bearing, like stable assets, and allow that to happen on Drift. That's on the earning like yield side. On the trading side, you know, we want to be the place that people trade anything. And that includes, you know, continuing to build out our spot aggregation and our spot, as well as the perp side. So super fast listing on perps, thinking like day of, like hour of listings, continuing to prove out the liquidity there to, you know, continue to inch towards what centralized exchanges have. It's going to take some time, but, you know, we think that in 5 to 10 years, centralized exchanges should cease to exist because everyone should be trading, on a centralized exchange. You know, I'm not going to name names, but you know, which one I would tell you to do to trade on. Yeah, and I think, you know, the kind of open source nature of Drift and what we do is that we're just going to be able to list assets much quicker than Binance could ever like list assets. We've already seen a slowdown of centralized exchange listings this year, and that trend is just going to continue. So a lot of people are going to continue to be regulated out of being able to trade derivatives on centralized exchanges. And as speed of Solana improves, growth improves, we see a lot of that actually migrating towards the places that will list assets fastest. So yeah, that kind of wraps into our next foray of adding like prediction market perps and the ability to trade assets that don't exist yet, right? Or don't actually exist on chain. Which we think is really gonna drive growth on the user front. Maybe not volumes, because most of the volumes still stay within majors and meme coins, but definitely on the attention and on the like truth seeking, truth settlement front. We do see Drift as the front and center of all of that. Yeah, that's a very long-winded answer, but honestly, home for all assets and ability to trade anything.
We love to hear it. Cindy, thank you so much for coming on. Before we go, we always ask this question to our guests, which is, who do you want to see on Flywheel? Who would you recommend as a guest for the show?
Ooh, that's a great question. Have you guys had, I mean, who else have you had on the Solana side? I guess like I probably, you know, point to someone there.
It doesn't matter. Just name a name.
Oh, I think FP from Sanctum would be awesome. They just launched their token. Yeah. And, they're building something that I think, is very interesting. You know, their vision is like, they want to build LSTs for every single protocol and every individual on Earth. So yeah, like would be really interesting for you guys to chat to Effie.
All right, noted. That's a good one. And where can people find you in Drift online?
Yeah, I'm at Cindy LEOWTT on Twitter and Drift Protocol for the protocol. Or you can just come on our website, we're drift.trade.
Cindy, thank you so much for coming on. We hope to see you soon.
Thank you so much, guys. This was an awesome chat.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Postgame Show. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capital K. We are finishing up an interview with Drift with Cindy. This was a great one. I really enjoyed hearing the lore of Drift and how she went from being a trader to being a builder and coming full circle, like launching a token and everything. So this was a fun one, and I liked how we went to a new ecosystem. With Solana. I mean, we've gotten like a few Solana people, but we really haven't done justice to it. But I think, I mean, no, wait, no, we had on fucking pump.fun. What am I saying? But, you know, this was a good one. Kit, what are your thoughts?
And honestly, I just love her story of, you know, building at the best of times and also and building through the worst of times. And with like her team and just the purity of the fact that we cannot go anywhere else because our tech won't work. And this is the best place that the tech will work. And therefore we have conviction. Oh, yeah, God, I love
think
that.
Think about how much
how
they were rewarded. How much they were rewarded for having that conviction.
Yeah, 100%. You know, kudos to the team. Oddly enough, like in 21, I think when at breakpoint of 21, I was there at a Drift party and I was like, man, they must be doing really good.
Well, everybody was doing really good in 21.
I was like, oh yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that's my key takeaway. I love her. I think she's great, fantastic founder, and very excited to see what else Drift's got cooking up.
Yeah, definitely bullish. But I'm optimistic about everyone. It's everyone we have on, honestly. We wouldn't have them on for no reason. But anyways, thank you everybody for watching. If you enjoyed what you see and want some more, make sure you hit that bell button, subscribe, give us a like, let us know what you think in the comments below. Follow us on all of our social media on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.